Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Good morning, 710 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. In the top of the hour news there, this is a phrase that radio people use, top and bottom of the hour. John, I'm curious, because I know how I use it.
Right.
What does top and bottom of the hour mean to you?
That means 0, 0, and 30.
Thank you. Same here. But I have also heard people top of the hour and the bottom is the back half hour. But that's not how I use it. It's top and bottom, like on a non-digital clock.
Right.
It's the top of the clock and the bottom of the clock. Anyway, so top of the hour news. Now you know. Fox was talking about the Daniel Penny case. And this is the subway restraint hold, I will say, is the most neutral way you can describe it. So this is a really, we've talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, we're into the, like, we're going to find out soon what's happened here, right? Because we've had the trial is in its final phase, the jury is deliberating or whatever to figure out what they're going to do with him. The short version, if you don't know the story, is, what did I say is Daniel Penny? Did I say a different name? Anyway, this guy was agitating on a subway car, and he seemed to be maybe dangerous, boisterous. There's some disagreement about the facts here, but Jordan Neely was, you know, being trouble is maybe a light way to say it. And Daniel Penny felt like there was he was a threat to people. And so a former Marine veteran, he put him in a choke. Well, he put him in a restraint hold. And he had his legs wrapped around him also. And a couple of other people were actually holding. A couple other guys were holding his hands, trying to hold him down and restrain him. And over the course of several minutes, and eventually he wound up dying. And that's whether, and now he's being tried for manslaughter and criminal negligent homicide. So it's a very complicated case, and there's a lot of particulars to it. But when I first saw this, I thought, I didn't really see a problem with it. Because what I thought was, this is somebody trying to create order in a concerning situation. Because if you're really worried that somebody is dangerous, menacing, you're not obligated to do nothing. You know, you're not obligated to wait for them to possibly, I don't know, draw a weapon or actually hit somebody, or especially if there's vulnerable people in the car with you. I don't have a problem with this. That was my first reaction. And when I watched the video, I thought, I don't see him doing anything really fundamentally wrong. They're not punching and kicking. They're not assaulting him in the what you might think of as a normal way. He's just restraining him. And so now that it's gone through its paces, and I have not watched the trial or anything like that, but now it's having gone through its paces and we're into the concluding arguments, I went back and watched the video that's available, and I don't see that what he did was fundamentally wrong. It's all about reasonability. When we talk to the sheriff, we talk about reasonability all the time. What are you reasonably afraid of? What can reasonably be done? If this person was demonstrating dangerous or, you know, concerning behavior, then I think you're allowed to take action to prevent them from harming somebody. Now, it turns out his background, he'd had some issues, right? He was a street performer, and that's not a criticism. His mom was violently killed when he was a teenager. He was diagnosed with depression, schizophrenia, repeatedly hospitalized, struggled with drug abuse, and had a criminal record that included assault convictions. Now, Daniel Penny obviously didn't know that when it happened. But a kind of person who's got that background, you can imagine, is a little more likely to display behaviors that might warrant a response. Now, again, Daniel Penny can't claim that's why it was okay. But you could say, and that's the kind of thing I was seeing, and this fits a pattern that I saw with my eyes. The other part of this, multiple witnesses said Neely shouted about needing food and something to drink, whipped his jacket to the floor and started screaming. They differed in descriptions of his movements and whether they were threatening. Several passengers said they were alarmed, and some were thankful when Penny subdued Neely. Prosecutors noted the veteran continued to grip Neely's neck after the train stopped, and anyone who wanted to get out could do so alleviating the danger argument. after bystanders urged Penny to let go and even after Neely had been still for nearly a minute. Right? So what started off, it seems fairly clearly justified, ended in a little less clear terrain. Okay? But the other thing that I keep thinking about this case is it's not described accurately. And I'll talk about that in just a second. Your calls, 437-1620, if you have an opinion about this case. You know, if you had been on the subway, if you'd have been in his position, if you'd have been in Penny's position, would you have acted? If you had been a bystander, what would you have thought of the situation? 437-1620. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still dealing with the congestion that's happening because of an accident. It's off to the side of the road. If you're on Avalon Boulevard heading southbound toward I-10, just be aware that there's a congestion back up there as onlookers look at that accident. Other than that, traffic is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So back to this case. It's a highly publicized case of, former Marine, Daniel Penny, and the death of Jordan Neely in a restraint hold. And I'm calling it that on purpose. Here's why. It gets called a choke hold a lot. You've heard that phrase a lot. Technically speaking, it's not a choke. A choke hold is to prevent you from breathing, to close off your trachea, okay? It's technically, the difference is there's a strangulation hold. Strangulation is to cut off the blood flow. You say, what's the difference? I thought they were the same. Well, go look it up. You'll see. They're different. But also, the way you apply, and typically like in martial arts, you don't really use choke holds. Like that's, I don't think in my martial arts I ever learned how to do a choke hold. But you do learn how to do submission or strangulation holds. You learn how to choke somebody out. And that's what you call it, choking them out. Even though you're not choking them, you're cutting off blood flow. It's cutting off the artery flow to the head. And it does not take long. If you get a strangulation hold appropriately applied, I mean, it's like 10 seconds. If it's applied to you, you know immediately. You immediately can tell the difference. And, you know, you better tap out quick because it does not take long. Now, of course, if you keep doing it for 30 seconds or more, you can kill somebody. You know, it's very effective. But the difference is when you're applying a submission hold or a strangulation hold, you typically don't use the meat of your forearm. You typically turn your wrist in sideways and use the bone because the bone is a more effective block against the artery. So you can tell by how somebody's thumb is positioned. If the hold applier's thumb is up in the air, they don't really know what they're doing. If the thumb applier's is like toward the person they're choking, that means they've got the wrist turned in, they more know what they're doing. And you really don't choke to the front. You don't submit to the front. You submit to the side because that's where the arteries are. And then you kind of press the head against like across your arm a little bit is kind of one way to do it. And like I said, it's very quick. So if you look at the video, you look at how it's applied, it's not applied tight. It's not a choke hold at all because he's got his head turned to the crick of the elbow so he can breathe. It's not a choke hold at all. Of course, that's how you apply a submission hold, is the head turned in. But if he's got him under submission and restraint, like, and it's not very tight. If you look at his arm position, it's not what any like martial arts instructor would tell you to do it this way. It's loose, okay? So I don't think it was a kill hold. I don't think it was the kind of thing that you normally worry about. And the fact that he continues to struggle is evidence that it wasn't really a strangulation hold at all. It was just he happened to have him by the neck and they had him with his legs wrapped around him and they were holding him on the ground. So I'm not a medical expert. I don't know how this was related to him passing out. He could have just been passed out from exhaustion or from God knows whatever else. But to say that he strangled him to death with that hold is highly unlikely to me because it took so long. It didn't seem to be that kind of a hold. And so that would seem to indicate that there wasn't any deliberate action. Okay, well, the guy's not wriggling anymore. What do you do now? Well, you probably disengage, but if your theory is that you're going to wait for the police, maybe you just loosen up a little bit and you wait for somebody to come. Because if you disengage and he wakes back up, now you got to deal with that problem all over again. So, did he wait too long? I don't know. That's the question. Did he kill him on purpose? I think clearly not. Was it a dangerous strangulation hold? Again, I don't think so based on what I've seen. 437-1620, 437-1620. Let's take a look at some of these calls. Somebody said, and my question was not only, you know, what do you think of the case, but what would you do, right? And John, that was kind of your question too, is, you know, would you interfere? Would you stand up? Because, you know, I always think, you know, you have a job. You have, if you're able to intervene, you should intervene.
Exactly.
Because you're protecting people who can't intervene for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll give you an example. Do I think it would have been legitimate to pull a gun on him? No. Because he wasn't exhibiting, you know, life-threatening behavior. Well, Andrew, he strangled him to death. You know, would it have been appropriate to maybe pull a nightstick, if you're thinking of as a cop? Yeah. Would it have been appropriate to tase him? Maybe. Seemed pretty close. You know, 437-1620. All right. It's no different than if he felt his life or life of the others was threatened and he shot him. Oh, see, I disagree. I don't think he could have shot him. Daniel Penny put him in a submission hold. The difference is chokehold cuts off oxygen. Okay, same thing here that I was saying. But again, I don't think it was a tight submission hold. And I mean, it wasn't because, again, he was alert and awake for way too long. His only fault was doing it in New York City, where criminals have more rights than citizens. Daniel Penny wasn't the only commuter that day that thought Neely was a threat. Another man helped. Two other people, as I remember from the video, were helping. First responders claimed that Neely had a pulse, so he wasn't dead at the time. He died later. Okay, I did not catch that detail. That would be pretty relevant. Somebody says, I would have done the same thing, same hold or restraint, and I'm not a Marine. So there you go. And I think that, too. I'm curious to see how this comes back, obviously, because juries make their decisions. But it seems to me like this is a case where somebody did right with training they had for the right reasons, and it turned out badly. If I'm the cops, I don't prosecute this case.
Not at all. No.
I mean, to me, it's not even that close to being a prosecutable. And so you've got to wonder, is the reason they're prosecuting it a race-related thing? You know, public outcry, which is extra concerning because that means you're doing injustice for the sake of public opinion. 722 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
At different times in our lives, we all have problems. Health problems, financial problems, relationship problems. But at no point are any of these problems our biggest problem. The biggest problem facing mankind is the sin problem. When Jesus came to the earth, he didn't solve everyone's health troubles, although he did help a few. He didn't solve everyone's financial trouble, although he did provide food for some. He didn't solve everyone's relationship problems, although a few were helped in that way. But when Jesus came to the earth, he did solve the problem of sin for everyone. He died a substitutionary death in your place and in mine. All we have to do is call upon him for salvation. Jesus is the greatest problem solver in human history.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Let's get to the points. MasterCard reward points from Pinair Credit Union. Open a new account today and you can earn 20,000 free reward points in the first 90 days. Use those points for travel, merchandise, even cash back. And with no hidden fees and no balance transfer fees, Pinair's Reward MasterCard fits you perfectly. Get started online at pinair.org/creditcards. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions may apply. Offer available on new accounts only. See website for details.
Deck your halls with windows and doors from New South. We keep your home comfy and cozy and can save you hundreds a year on energy bills. Plus, every product we make and install is guaranteed for life. It's another reason to be jolly all year long. Now, through December 31st, you have one more reason to celebrate. Buy two New South windows and doors and get one free. Visit newsouthwindow.com/radio to get a quote.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
If you vote for me, all of your wildest dreams will come true.
You Good morning, 724 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Oh, we have a new development in the Ospreys, or the ongoing discussion about the CV-22 that the Marines and the Navy uses. And I think the Air Force uses it for special... they use it for special operations out of Herbert Field. Remember I told you last week that Military.com had done some really, really good reporting, and they had found that one of the supplier companies for the metal that goes in the gearboxes on the wings that connects the various elements and makes the plane fly eventually, that the metals manufacturer supplier had a lawsuit against them back 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, where they were at fault for producing inadequate metal, that they did not follow their own protocols in testing the metal, that they basically put up all of this fake architecture of how we are self-checking and regulating, and then they weren't doing it. And so the best going theory is that, and they don't make all of the metal that goes in those gearboxes. There's another company that does it as well, at least one other. So we don't know which Ospreys have the allegedly defective metal. But there's now a lawsuit by the family of one of the airmen that was killed in the Japan crash, arguing wrongful death and naming the manufacturers and that supplier by name. Universal something, or I don't have the story right in front of me. I'm going to memory a little bit. I will tell you that for me, based on what I know at this point, I rule for the plaintiffs that this is a criminal negligence. And I'll go farther with that. Actually, I'll tell you more in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. And still no accidents to let you know about, but we are seeing some backups on I-10 eastbound from Pine Forest all the way through Highway 29 through that construction zone. It's just congestion, no accidents there. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Yeah, Staff Sergeant Jacob Gallagher, age 24, one of eight airmen killed in the training mission November of last year when the Osprey crashed off of the coast of Japan. Lawsuit named Boeing, Bell Textron, the manufacturer of the aircraft, as well as Universal Stainless. That's the one who makes the defective metal. And Alloy, as far as, you know, the report indicates. And Alloy Products, a subcontractor that provided metal for the aircraft's gearbox, and internal investigation implicated in the crash. The lawsuit alleges those companies, quote, had prior awareness of the high risk for crashes, including documented concerns with the alloy manufacturing for pinion gears in the aircraft's gearbox. The lawsuit that's just been filed is the second. There's another lawsuit by another group of families for a crash the prior year. And the new lawsuit actually cites Military.com's reporting in this. So, you know, reporting of good information really can make a difference in the world. And the other thing about this, just kind of worth noting, is neither the military nor Bell Textron has even been willing to say whether Universal Stainless is still making parts for the aircraft. Good Lord, people. I mean, this is amazing. Let alone that the ones that have that particular company's metal in them should be grounded. They won't even say whether they're making it anymore? Come on now. Now, two notes on this story that might be worth making. One is, you know, what should be done with whoever's responsible. I am a big fan of accountability for corporate decision makers. Like, I have no problem throwing CEOs and board members into jail for criminal negligence that leads to death. Whatever the penalty is for negligent homicide should be applied to whoever the board members were, the managers, the supervisors. I mean, literally anybody involved in the process that allowed defective metal to go into these gearboxes should be in jail. I have no, now, typically they're shielded. Corporations, you don't punish corporations this way. But if you've ever watched the outstanding documentary about this called The Corporation, which explains how our laws make it possible for corporations to be sociopathic, I mean, that needs to change. I mean, this is like the Pinto all over again. You know, you don't fix it, it's a cheap fix, and people die. I don't care whether it's an expensive fix or not, but you can't send members of the military into the field with a known defective thing, and then they die, and you're like, well, you know, oh well. Unacceptable. One last quick note on this is the particular member of the military, Jacob Gallagher, Staff Sergeant Jacob Gallagher, who's being, his family is suing. We have a very small Pensacola connection to him because part of his training actually took him through the language school in Monterey that is overseen by CIWIT, Center for Information Warfare Training. So in a very indirect sort of way, there's a little connection between him and Pensacola because the command that oversees a part of one of his training elements was here. It just happened to be in his bio, and I noticed it. Let's see. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, President-elect Donald Trump sending a warning to Hamas, demanding the release of all remaining October 7th hostages. He posted on Truth Social yesterday. Trump said that, quote, there will be all hell to pay if the hostages are not immediately released before he returns to office on January 20th. Harvey Weinstein is back in the hospital in New York. A Weinstein spokesperson says he had some type of a blood test result that needed immediate medical attention. He's been battling a series of health problems as he awaits a retrial in New York on sex crime charges and a new sex assault allegation.
All right, very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Sheriff Chip Simmons. We might ask him about the Daniel Penny case. Also, one of his friends, a fellow Floridian sheriff, has gotten pulled for DEA chief. We'll talk to him about that coming up next.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Biden in Africa meeting with the president of Angola.
Very proud to be the first American president to visit Angola. And I'm deeply proud of everything we have done together to transform our partnership thus far.
Handshakes and smoothing in the upper chamber. People who want to serve under President-elect Trump.
Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth, Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi, and Homeland Security Secretary nominee Kristi Noem will be on Capitol Hill. Bondi and Hegseth met with some lawmakers. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says this of Bondi: good meeting with President Trump's nominee for Attorney General Pam Bondi. As judicial chairman, I look forward to considering her nomination in the new Congress.
That's Fox's Madeline Rivera reporting. GM to recall more than 132,000 U.S. vehicles over a tailgate issue. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got mostly sunny skies. I'm sorry. It is 42 degrees here in Pensacola. A University of West Florida professor getting federal help in his search for more information on Alzheimer's. UWF professor Dr. Rodney Gutman has been awarded a $400,000 grant from the National Institute of Health to continue research on blood-based biomarkers, which could potentially lead to early diagnosis of the disease.
So if we can identify someone in their 40s and 50s based on these changes we might see in their blood, well, now you are a candidate for a clinical trial or to alter your own, you know, everyday living.
Dr. Gutman hopes that his research will lead to earlier and more accurate diagnoses that could lead to better patient outcomes. The school says this will allow Gutman and his students to continue their cutting-edge research. One person was taken to the hospital after a vehicle ran off the road and crashed into a tree, then caught on fire Sunday. That happened on Highway 98 near Aaron Drive. Escambia Fire Rescue says firefighters were able to quickly put out the fire to prevent it from spreading into the woods. EMS took the driver of the vehicle to the hospital. There's no word on their current condition. Another motorcycle fatality reported in Escambia County yesterday. That happened in a multiple car collision on 29 around Tate School Road. The motorcyclist crashed into an SUV. The SUV then hit a sedan at a stop sign. The rider died at the scene of that crash. Well, peanut processor Coastal Growers and Atmore's filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They reportedly owe anywhere from $100 to $500 million to creditors. The processor opened in 2022 with investments from many area peanut farmers.
It has been terrible, honestly, for the farmers. It has put a lot of really good farmers in a really bad financial position.
Ryan Jenkins from Jenkins Farms and Jay, he says many of the farmers have lost sizable investments into that facility at a time when they couldn't afford to lose any more money due to the state of agriculture here in the area. Well, now that chilly weather has moved into the area, Escambia Fire Rescue encouraging people to practice space heater safety and know the potential risks associated with using small space heaters. According to the National Fire Protection Association, heating equipment is one of the leading causes of home fire deaths, and space heaters account for about 4 out of 5 home heating fire deaths. And if you are using one and you need a smoke detector, in Escambia County, just call 850-595-HERO, and you can get one for free. An Orange County woman that killed her boyfriend will spend the rest of her life in prison. A judge sentenced to Winter Park's Sarah Boone, the suitcase killer, to life in prison for second-degree murder in the death of Jorge Torres Jr. yesterday. Torres Jr. died in 2020 after being zippered up in a suitcase, and Boone reportedly refused to let him out as he suffocated. Boone claimed she suffered from battered spouse syndrome, and she said she killed Torres in self-defense. Before that trial, she was offered a 15-year sentence and a plea deal, but she rejected that. Boone's lawyer says he'll meet with her today to discuss a possible appeal. 735 at News Radio. John's got our traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by the Watson Law Firm. If you've been injured in a car accident, visit watsonfirm.com. No accidents to let you know about right now, but we're still seeing those delays on I-10 eastbound all the way up to 9 Mile Road entrance through the construction zone on Highway 29. And it's about a 5 to 7 minute delay there. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
Is another cold start to the day with temperatures in the 30s. In the afternoon, warming up near 57 degrees with mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping back near 37 degrees. For that Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 65 degrees. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 56. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It is 42 degrees and sunny right now in Pensacola, 43 in Gulf Breeze, and 37 in Milton. Our next news at 8 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Microsoft has been accused in a UK lawsuit of unfairly overcharging customers of rival cloud companies, including Amazon, Google, and Alibaba Cloud. The lawsuit alleges UK businesses are forced to pay more to license Microsoft's Windows Server software on rival firms' clouds than its own Azure platform. UK firms are owed more than $1.2 billion in compensation from the anti-competitive practices. The owner of Stoli Brand Vodka and Kentucky Owl Bourbon has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Stoli Group's U.S. unit listed more than $100 million in assets and up to $100 million in liabilities. And coming later this morning, investors await the October job openings report. Data drops at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Futures are currently mixed. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials lost 128, the NASDAQ gained 185, and the S&P 500 up 14. That's your money now.
Sarah, it's been ages. How are things?
Hey, Lisa. Things are okay, I guess. Things with Mark haven't felt the same lately.
Oh, Sarah, that is so common. It could just be ED or low testosterone.
Really? I didn't even think about that. I was blaming myself.
Yeah, Jim had ED and low T. I thought I was doing something wrong, but it's just a medical condition. Now he's passionate about his job again, lost a little weight, and even put on some muscle since he went to Wave Men's Health. They specialize in ED and low T treatments, and you should see the way he looks at me now.
Wave Men's Health delivers powerful, personalized treatments to reignite the passion in your relationship, even if other pills and treatments haven't done the job. Don't let ED or low T put a damper on what should be the best time of the year.
I forgot how we used to feel. I got my husband back.
Dial 850-266-7020 or visit WaveMensHealth.com today and rekindle the magic, because you both deserve to feel the joy this season brings. Wave Men's Health, making it happen.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in Thursday at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
This is Hill Kelly Dodge wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, this is Joe with Peden Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical wishing you a very comfortable holiday season.
This is Barry Cole at Beret Jewelers wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, everybody. This is Sonia Duca with Trinity Wellness of Pensacola and now in Pace. And we just want to wish you a very happy holiday. And we're just thinking of all of you. Bye. Happy holidays.
Hi,
this is Tom Baudette from Manger 6. We know you've been traveling a lot this holiday season, and you've probably been told there's no room at the inn. Well, that's just not the case here at Manger 6.
This is Jeff Wayne, General Sales Manager, wishing you a very Merry Christmas and a super Happy New Year.
Hi, I'm Morgan, Promotion Assistant for Cat Country, wishing you a Happy Holidays and a Merry Christmas.
This is Tom Baudette from Manger 6 reminding you there's always room at this inn. We'll even leave a star out for you.
Good morning, 7:40 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm great. It's very good to have you. Lots to get to this morning, including some cases that are not here in Escambia County. Let's start with the ones that are. Beggs Lane, the notorious camping by many, many, many homeless people. What, 50 or so at least?
Oh, at least.
Lots of trash, lots of... But you guys, based on the new law, you cannot allow public camping, and you're cleaning up the area, or somebody's cleaning up the area. What is your level of involvement?
Well, it's as simple as the Beggs Lane area. The area is being cleaned up that we're talking about is county property. Mm-hmm. That means the county owns the property. That means they can call the sheriff's office and say, remove this individual from our property, just like you would at your home or you would at your home. So that's what we're doing.
Who called you? The county
the
called?
The county. Escambia County.
Like who specifically? Do you know?
Well, they're... We got a call. Initially, it was from the county administrator and
okay,
then it's the people that are involved in all that. It's a combined effort by the county.
Okay, fair enough.
Through their credit, they've had about 3 or 4 meetings that we've attended. And they said, okay, this is the time. They've given them 30, 60, 90 days. And they've told them that these are the resources available to you. They've had those resources been over there the last couple weekends. And so our job, whenever they came to us and said, "Hey, we're at the point where we need to get them gone," mm-hmm. So like we would again any other private property, we go over there and we did give them a trespass warning yesterday, and we're going to go back there today. And if they're not gone, we're going to put them in jail.
Okay, so they were told they had to be gone by today. If they're still there, they go to jail.
Yeah, but again. They've known this
but they've
for
had long
months.
This is not months. Sudden. Yeah. This is not
this
sudden.
This is not one of those things, okay, it's the coldest day of the year. We're going to get you gone. No, I drove by yesterday. There was an ambulance on standby. There was a ECAT was there to take them wherever they wanted to go. And again, this is just because they waited until the last minute. This is not a secret. This is not any kind of a sweep. But it's about time, to be honest with you. If you've seen Beggs Lane in the area that it has become, you would say what I'm saying, that this is about time. We have had numerous calls for service there. We've had stabbings there. We've had a shooting there. We just have a lot of trouble there at this particular area. Not the only one, but I'm glad to see that Escambia County seems to be doing it right. They gave them plenty of time. We get there, we give them a warning, and then we come back the next day.
And plenty of agencies there to help, including obviously Waterfront has been featured a lot in this,
right,
but several other agencies as well, Lakeview, you know, to get right, whatever service they need to get them to a safe place, which they just cannot stay there. Yeah. And it's a dangerous place to go. You shouldn't go back there when it was sort of in their control, so to speak. Right. You know, and I've had, you know, kind of, I had an inkling to go look at it one time, and I talked to somebody that said, you know, hey, don't go on your own. Go with me. Let me find out if that's going to be safe. And that kind of, which is, you know, that's just being aware of the world, right?
Right. Right. And it's not their property.
Right.
But I think this is the way that you would want it to go. This is the way I would want it to go from a human aspect of things. First of all, you've allowed them to stay there. So now let's give them the services or give them the options. You know, these are your options. 1, 2, 3, 4. If you want mental health, we have mental health. If you want to go to Waterfront, we have Waterfront. We have, you know, again, Lakeview in regards to the mental health.
Right.
If you go to a hospital, we will transport you to the hospital. And I'm not getting too much of their business, but I understand they've even allowed for some, they've been fixing some cars so people can have transportation. They provided them, you know, funds to, if they wanted to just stay here long enough to get out of town, to get back home, mm-hmm. they were providing them with those funds. So I think they've done it the right way.
And the county's had the relocation program in for a while where we'll put you on a bus, you know, we'll
exactly
send you back home if you have a home to go to. Because that's a lot of times that's what people actually need, because they need to be around people they know, support system they know. Part of the problem of being here if they're not from here is they don't have anything to help them. And mm-hmm. that's even worse. So yeah, no, I agree.
And I've been telling people for years now, we are prepared to move people if you ask us to move people. Again, if it's your property, we'll remove them. But we want to do it in a humanitarian type of manner.
And as of yet, no resistance, no violence, no trouble.
We'll find out today, I guess.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, today is when you start to implement, right? Really?
Right. Yesterday we arrested two people, one for a domestic violence situation that happened in the camp.
Okay.
And then another individual had warrants on him from Texas, but they said they wanted to extradite. So we put that person in jail. But today... I spoke to a couple of people there yesterday, and I said, where do y'all plan on going? I said, we're going to move down the street, which I guess ultimately is not a solution, but at least it's a start. This, to me, has nothing to do with state statute because that comes into effect in January.
Okay.
What this is just as a property owner saying, please come and get this.
It just happens to be a governmental property owner.
It happens to be, right.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is why I've been trying to push for a corresponding ordinance that will match the state statute so that if there's county property that we can take action. And then I'm also asking, we talked a little bit about the cities. The city has an ordinance against public camping.
Right.
But they backed off on the one.
That's right.
On the private property.
Yeah.
And what I would probably, and I'll say it here now, what I'd probably is ask them to do is reevaluate it. Private commercial to me, I don't think that they should allow people to just camp that, because what's happened is if we have a small piece of property, even around Beggs Lane, mm-hmm. everyone's going to that property. It's a commercial piece of property, and it's and no one knew who the owner was.
Right.
So we're kind of stuck now with that particular person. So if you own commercial property, if you want someone to camp there, then give them permission. I'm okay with that. But I think that if you're like a vacant landowner, if you're you own commercial property.
Or dilapidated, property, abandoned, all that stuff.
And those are code enforcement issues. But I think there's some things that we can do. I can simply tell you that the sheriff's office is prepared to assist the Escambia County and any commercial business or any private business or private landowner. If there's someone on your property you don't want there, we'll tell you, hey, you're allowing them to stay, so you have to go through the eviction process. Or, no, they you're right, they got to go, and we're certainly willing to do that.
We're talking to Sheriff Chip Simmons. Let's get a quick traffic report from John.
No accidents to report right now, but if you're on 98 eastbound from the Navarre Beach Bridge going east, you're going to experience about a 20-25 minute delay just due to congestion through that construction zone. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. We have so much to get to. We had a shots fired at W Street in Maxwell. Was this the one where the couple was kind of driving around the block in the car, and it's a question whether they shot at the house or shot in the air or whatever? Is that the one?
Yeah, all I can tell is we got a call that what they call a shots fired disturbance. It's some sort of an issue, and the shots were fired. So we obviously want to get there pretty quickly. But what they told us was there was a guy in a black SUV that was the shooter, a white guy in an SUV. So our deputies, to their credit, while en route, they located a black SUV with a white guy driving. So they stopped this car. During that stop, we located two firearms, one of which was stolen out of Mobile, Alabama. We found some ammunition, but also concerning is we found trafficking amounts of meth and trafficking amounts of fentanyl. We also found some crack cocaine, other narcotics, and we ended up arrested. There are two people we arrested. Both were convicted felons, by the way. We arrested Josh DeMoss and Ashley Workman. So deputies did a good job.
So what started as a shots fired turned into a massive narcotics and weapons arrest for former felons. Color me shocked. but still, as a couple, and that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot for them, right? And plus possession as felons, right?
Yeah. Well, remember, there's possession of a certain drug, and then there's possession with intent to distribute.
Oh, I meant possession of the gun.
Guns. And then there's ultimately, I was getting into the trafficking is even a greater amount of drugs. And you're right, possession of the firearms themselves will probably get them where they belong.
We had sort of an unusual one only because the person involved, a car stolen that y'all pitted at T and Hernandez, just middle-aged lady, and then she ran.
Yeah, we've started to pit more of the stolen cars because of that connection to drive-by shootings, like we saw with the story we just talked about. And so our deputy got behind a stolen car and turned the lights on, and the car decided that, nope, I'm not going to stop. So we stopped them. We helped them with their decision making, and we ended up arresting the.
And just for people who might not remember, the former policy was typically if they flee, let them go because it creates too much danger to pursue. But because of the frequent use of stolen cars in drive-by shootings, you changed responses and you're now pitting those cars because this is a way to prevent homicides or the risk of it. Just for people who haven't been tracking all of this over the time we've been talking, go ahead.
Well, I will tell you that just to make sure everyone understands, there's no statute that says we can't pursue a car for a tag light. Florida Highway Patrol has a different standard. They most of theirs is interstate and such, and so they typically will pursue for more than we would. Our policy has been, and other agencies have been, the agencies even that I have been associated with, have been, well, let's not chase them because, again, that danger. So we weigh that risk. And so what I determined was, you know what, I certainly don't want anyone to get hurt. So if we try to stop someone and it is for a forcible felony or a felon like a stolen car, again, that connection that you and I just spoke of, then let's not just pursue them. Let's not just wait till they run out of gas. Let's pull them, pull up to them, and let's spin that car around. We got better bumpers now, enhanced bumpers, so that we can spin the car. And as we can do that quickly, and this is exactly what happened in this situation, we spun her around pretty quickly. I don't know that she was expecting that, which is good for me. Kind of makes me smile. Anyway, so then we end up arresting her. Now, it's not unusual for us to stop a stolen car that where a female would be driving, but a lot of times the car will be borrowed three times down. You know,
okay,
it was stolen, then someone else borrowed it. But rarely do they actually run, and I don't know. But in this particular situation, I guess. Too much video games. I don't know.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
We also had kind of an odd story where the couple invited the former husband over for Thanksgiving, and then he winds up attacking the husband, and the husband, stabs him, right?
That's it. The ex-husband, yes, stabbed the current husband. And we're talking about a 70-year-old and a 72-year-old. We're talking about one heck of a Thanksgiving dinner here. But in this situation, exactly what you said, we charged an individual with attempted murder, because during that altercation or that disturbance that, he pulled out a knife of some sort and ended up.
Why was he there?
Thanksgiving time to make amends. I don't know.
Okay. Trying to be nice. I guess. Okay. It was a strange story for sure. A couple of sort of not here events, but I wanted to get your perspective on it. Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister, you familiar with him? I figured you sheriffs all know each other basically in Florida. Okay,
we certainly know. We talk. Yeah.
Okay, and he's been like three terms in office. He was unopposed this last time. He's been tapped to head the DEA.
Right.
Thoughts?
I think it's a good call. I've known Chad for a long time. If you recall, 4 years ago when the governor came over here to talk about border security, Chad was one of the sheriffs there's three or four sheriffs that joined me up there and discussing this with the governor. So I know that he has an emphasis on border security and local drugs. So here's why I think it's a good choice. First of all, Chad does a really good job. Hillsborough County is a pretty big agency, probably has as many deputies as DEA has. He understands. He's probably involved in as many DEA type task forces as we are, if not more.
Okay.
In fact, I would say it probably is more. And all of our DEA task forces have connections, not just throughout the United States, but also internationally, specifically the border. So I think that he's going to bring that local perspective. But when I say local, a big agency, a large agency, large city, the Tampa area, where there's obviously a lot of drugs. And I think that he understands what happens locally whenever the fentanyl gets to the streets. And I'm sure their agency, like ours, have made many, many large fentanyl cases, which, again, we have as well. And so it's going to take a little time for him to kind of get familiar with what the capabilities are, the complete capabilities are. And I'm talking about internationally with regards to DEA. But I think it's a good choice. I think I've talked to him many times. I've known him, obviously, since I've been the sheriff. And I think he'll do a great job.
Did they call you?
No. Okay. I'm glad. I don't think I would. I don't think I would.
You do have a background in narcotics and SWAT and all that.
Yeah,
so anyway,
yeah,
I figured the answer was no, but I did. I figured I would ask.
Yeah. No. I probably wouldn't take that job anyway.
One of the big stories today, actually two, one locally and one not, is one is the Daniel Penny case, and this is the former Marine who wound up in a restraint hold of a guy who wound up dying later on. Would you have charged this guy when you see this particular case?
I've seen the video, and I can't see a scenario that we would charge someone for that. I want people to know and to feel reassured that they can step up and help somebody and not end up in jail because of it. We talk about reasonableness a lot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've seen what they call the chokehold, and that's a stretch to me. There are other people that are kind of helping them out, but I don't know. I just think if someone steps up to help others, I think that you should get the benefit of the doubt. And I can't imagine a scenario that we would charge an individual like that.
Man, it's good to live in Escambia County, I'll tell you that much. Last one is red light cameras we've been talking about quite a bit today because they started to put up the poles in Pensacola, 9th and Bayou, 9th and Airport, and 9th and Fairfield are in the process of being installed. This, I think of this as being started under Tommy Leiter. Did this start actually a little bit under you with Mayor Hayward?
Well, we did have some conversations about not just red light cameras, but also speed enforcement cameras. Even back then, they had the technology, and some places do. I think I heard you talk about it.
Yeah, I know Phoenix
Europe.
Does, right.
But yeah, there's a lot of places that do that here. We had those conversations, and the company came. This was about the same time that Gulf Breeze started their camera system. And then they were having some issues, and so state statute was going back and forth. So we decided at the time, Mayor Hayward and I decided at the time to let's see where the state falls before we get ahead of ourselves. And so fast forward, I retire, and then I guess Chief Leiter comes in, and he and Ashton Hayward still are still looking at the cameras, and then I think he and Grover were, yep. were or Mayor Robertson
pushing for it, right?
We're pushing for it. So where it started, who signed the paperwork? I guess DC and M did, but it was something that we've been looking at for 10 years.
Fan?
I think that it's a great enforcement tool for certain intersections. I'm not a
not
big brother kind of guy.
Right, right.
I'm more of a freedoms, which is odd because I'm trying to put cameras out on main roadways for
right,
our intersections.
Right.
But all of our cameras are on roadways, you know, on public areas where you have little to no expectation of privacy.
Right.
And these cameras are doing, if you think about the intersections, it's almost impossible for a police officer or a deputy for that matter to stand at one area. And first of all, if you see someone running it, if they don't run right towards you, you got 25% chance, right?
Right.
So if they're not running towards you, it's hard for you to get out. So you're causing more trouble if you're trying to chase someone through a mid 9th and Bayou. You have to run your lights and stop all these cars, and it's just by the time you get up there, it's just congested. It's a mess. So I support it at certain large intersections where law enforcement has a difficulty with the enforcement
and where there's a habit of running red lights, and there clearly is.
That's almost everywhere.
Yeah. That's everywhere. Yeah. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thanks for the time and the perspective and the information and for keeping us safe. I appreciate it, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report right now, but if you're on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29 through that construction zone, you're definitely going to see some delays. And also, if you're traveling 98 eastbound, just right past the Navarre Beach Bridge, heading through Windhaven Beach, there's still about a 10 to 15 minute delay there just due to construction and congestion. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Visit Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze for custom engraving and unique gifts. Specializing in creating extraordinary keepsakes, their expert engravers bring your vision to life with elegant monograms, personalized messages, and logos. Whether it's custom drinkware, engraved glassware, or home decor, each piece is crafted with attention to detail for any occasion. Perfect for birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, or corporate gifts, Prim and Proper ensures your gift will leave a lasting impression. Stop by their Gulf Breeze location or visit them online at primandproper.com.
It's open enrollment time for health insurance.
Have you signed up? Do you know where?
Whether you currently have coverage or not, there are some important things you need to know. Get your questions answered. Tune in Thursday at 9 a.m. as Chad PQ from Affiliated Insurance joins the Pensacola Expert Panel so you can get the facts and the latest information on healthcare.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
This message is sponsored by the Florida A&M University Medical Marijuana Education and Research Initiative, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Mary on Demand is live. Start your marijuana education journey today. Learn at your own pace and check out the Medical Marijuana Education Series. You decide what you'd like to learn and when with Mary on Demand. Visit mary.famu.edu. That's mmeri.famu.edu. And remember, recreational marijuana is still illegal in Florida. Mary, educate, learn, talk.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
All right, 7:59 here on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, a driver in custody, Andrew, apparently after crashing into the main gate of the Nevada Air National Guard base in Reno, Nevada yesterday. They say nobody was injured, but the driver was quickly apprehended. It's unclear if the crash was intentional, but it did put that base into a lockdown.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update.